48, 49, 50.
What you doing?
Oh, hey, Watson. Just getting jacked up for the summer with my pull-up routine. Ooh.
No, Buzz. We get jacked up because electric rates often go up during the hot summer months.
More expensive? When we're needed most? Weird flex.
Good thing people can lock in an affordable electric plan with APG&E. Then it's the same predictable rate every month.
Learn more at APGE.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Today is Disclosure Day, meaning that Steven Spielberg's latest movie is released, as you probably hear in the adverts as well. And based on the reviews, it owes a little to some of his previous work, particularly Close Encounters and the aforementioned E.T. Now, if you go to see it in the cinema, it will probably be in the digital form. And that's despite the fact that Spielberg still shoots all his movies on film. In Ireland, there's only one cinema that can screen the movie in the widest film format. That's 70 millimetres. That's the IFI in Dublin. Paul Markey is chief projector there. Good afternoon, Paul.
How's it going?
Now, Spielberg actually films in 70 millimetres.
Well, he generally, it's 35 millimeter is the base level that he shoots with. And in this case, he wanted to distribute the film also in 70 millimeter because there's been a resurgence of interest in those large format.
Yeah.
So a lot of the young directors have insisted as part of their contracts, they want their films printed on 70 mil and shown in 70 mil. So Spielberg being, you know, massive proponent of this also has, now that he's returned to this science fiction and more popular, rather than historical films he's done in recent years, insisted 70 mil. So that's what we've got.
Yeah. Okay. And why? Why has there been a resurgence? Because I would have thought it's much easier and less hassle to shoot it on digital.
Yeah. Well, he's never shot digital ever. I mean, perhaps some special effects originally, but his company makes digital movies, but he says never for him. He even edits his films on film and not on digital. I guess it's there's a certain amount of nostalgia involved, but there's also a quality thing because there's nothing compares to the look of film, whether it's 35 or 70. And if 70 millimeter is done correct, it looks pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, people's standards have really become warped, I think, in the last decade or so with the internet. What's regarded as a good picture, a good good image, is just all over the place. So I think one of the great benefits now is that people's eyes are getting a whole new education.
Yeah.
And what a film can look and feel like. And
yeah. Okay. So what? Give us some examples of what the differences are and why it's better on film.
Well, predominantly, it's the grain. I mean, nothing feels like film. It's even handling it and the smell of it from our point of view. But there's a very, a very evenness that comes from digital. And I've discovered now running films for people over the recent, especially in the last 10 years, even the flaws that are inherent with film where you might get an odd hair or dust or things like that, people enjoy that.
Yeah.
And even when we've had, we run so many prints, people enjoy the occasional breakdown and we have to fix something or something snaps, which is, goes, I mean, we're up there sweating and people are like, hey, it's like the old days. But it makes them feel, the experience is something special. You're not just pressing a button and then it stops at the end and that's it.
Yeah. So did he shoot this on 70 or 35?
On 35 and he blew it up to 70 for release, yeah.
Right, okay. And, so but if it's blown up, does that necessarily mean the 70 millimetre is better?
It depends on how much time and effort you're going to put into the post-production. And Spielberg being Spielberg, he put a lot of effort because it's the best looking blow up I've seen in years, from a 35 to a 70. And I watched the digital copy for test purposes, and then I watched the 70 mil when we got it in some time later. And I was surprised in myself. I prefer the 70 mil because it just wows, and you can see the grain in it, the touch, the hand touch.
Yeah.
There's not a uniformness that you find in digital.
Because I haven't seen the film yet, but from reviews there's the odd bit of camera flare and that kind of stuff.
Oh, yes.
So he wants to remind you this is film.
Yes, no one does flares like Spielberg. I think, you know, other filmmakers have tried to copy this over the years. I think J.J. Abrams is the most famous one, but no one does it like him. I mean, there's amazing stuff. Even on the second watch, I was like, wow, look at what's going on behind the characters, never mind what's going on in front of them. But remarkable, like see, moments where you see he's famous for what's called the Spielberg Oneer, where there are no cuts. And you're really lulled into this. Sometimes you see sequences like, oh, there's been no cuts for the last minute or two. It's just completely flows. And again, other filmmakers have tried to be inspired by this, but no one does it like him.
Yeah.
You know, you just don't know.
That's funny because the Wonder is only, it's only in the last few years people are aware of it and think it's some sort of big achievement. But directors have been doing it for decades
without
any great fanfare to it.
Yeah, because the secret of pulling that off is not to draw attention to it.
Mm.
And then it's only when you start thinking later, oh yeah, there's been no cuts in the camera. This has been going on for a good few minutes now. And he is the master of that.
Yeah. So to show it in 70mm, like what arrives into the IFI? How big is it?
Well, this film in particular, they maxed out the space on their reels. So we got three huge reels. Often you get six, depending on how much they'll fill up for security purposes. But I did the maths on the footage count, and it's 6 kilometers from first frame to last frame. So if you stretch it out, you know, and held it, it would be six kilometers, which is not the longest we've had. Like Oppenheimer, I think might be 11 miles. If you switch
back. That's a bit of a walk.
Yeah, but it's the weight is a bit of a challenge. Like we one of our projectionists, Ashling, had a brainwave, and she built a track. So we could haul the reels up the stairs rather than try and lift them up, which is terrible on the back.
Yeah.
Which is where you just did it. This is the first film we've used that system with now, and it's been great. So we're definitely going to be sticking with that.
Yeah. And so you have these three huge cans, and have you got three projectors, or how does that work?
They're all spliced together into one giant reel of film, if you can imagine that. And it's on what I often refer to as a keg stand. It's a big metal plate. And the film just sits horizontally, and then it has three levels, and you feed the film from that plate into the projector, and it comes back out, and then it begins to fill up again on the bottom plate. And then the next show, you start in the bottom plate, and it fills up on the top plate. You keep going up and down as each show progresses.
Okay, so you can show it in one continuous
thing
rather than having the old-fashioned break in the middle
kind of
thing.
That's actually the change. That's called the changeover system, and that is in the past, it's the best way to run a film without damaging the reels or risking damage to the reels, because we can do that in the IFI. We have two film projectors set up for screen one, and sometimes we get really old archival prints, which you have to sign a waiver saying you will not edit these together. You must run them one reel at a time, and that takes a lot of concentration to make that flawless. Like an audience that have no clue, you're constantly switching between projectors, you're reloading the second one, the next reel and so forth, like a cannon on the ship. And then you're moving, you're timing it all. And if you do it correctly, the audience has no idea. So we do that sometimes. I try and do it alone. If you have even one other person in the booth and you get into a conversation, you get distracted and you've got to concentrate.
Yeah.
It's a real zen thing.
This message is sponsored by IQ Bar.
Hey, I'm Will. I started IQ Bar because I couldn't find a protein bar that wasn't loaded with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients, so I decided to make my own. IQ Bars are ultra-low sugar, packed with protein, fiber, and brain-boosting nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and they got zero weird ingredients. And if you've been meaning to try them, now is a great time, because right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping when you visit iqbar.com and enter promo code BAR20. Whether you're at your desk, on the road, or mid-workout, IQ Bar has functional, clean, and delicious options for every occasion.
Now you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping when you visit iqbar.com and enter promo code BAR20. To get 20% off plus free shipping, go to iqbar.com and enter promo code BAR20. That's iqbar.com, promo code BAR20.
This is a paid message from GoFundMe. Meet Juan Naula. When his son was hospitalized for a viral infection, Juan started a GoFundMe to pay for medical expenses.
It was $5,000 to pay the bill for my son, and I need only 22 hours. It was amazing. People really trust on GoFundMe.
How did Juan raise $5,000 in less than a day? He posted a short video on GoFundMe, telling his story in 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Be specific, be quick, and tell what are you going to be using the funds for. I was nervous to do it because it doesn't feel okay to ask money, but you shouldn't be nervous. Sometimes you just have to do it and see the results. We were able to save my son's life. Thanks to GoFundMe that we still have my son with us.
Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This message reflects one person's experience.
Are there many projectionists left anymore? Because they were thinking, under the digital, is it just plug it in and press a button kind of thing?
Yeah, well, I guess it's unique. It's different in most countries. Like archives, the IFI is an archive as well as a cinema. So we have to maintain the skills. Like we have a bunch of 35mm and 70mm projectors. So we have a team in there and we're just... What's great about the resurgence of 70mm is it gives us a chance to train new people, a younger generation, and they're actually interested,
yeah.
Which is the big change because of the likes of Christopher Nolan, probably the biggest proponent of film and 70mm. He's so popular with a certain generation of people, I find people are really want to learn the new skills. So, which is wonderful for me because there was a time there where I thought I might be the last generation to really get to grips with the system.
Yeah.
But the big offshoot of this is now that people are genuinely interested and want to learn, younger people, like, which is great. So we have a few people who are learning now with Disclosure Day.
Yeah.
I'll be observing and I'll be training them as we go along.
And the projectors themselves, are they still manufactured?
No.
Can you get spare parts?
That's the problem, yeah. We do our best. Like it's like a Formula One sometimes. The film's over. We have a set amount of time. We have to clean the projector, make sure it's all fine for the next show. Anything that's built up in the gate, any wax that sometimes comes off, new prints and so forth. Yeah, spare parts are an issue. Like we do often go on eBay and Facebook groups and we look for bits that we're trying to prepare for something that might go. But hopefully... if things continue the way they are, maybe manufacturers will actually make these things new, because it's a different challenge. It's constantly moving parts, so if something's kind of takes a lot of care.
Yeah, but Christopher Nolan and Steven Spielberg must be getting them from someplace.
Yeah, well, they have. But the studios themselves would have this equipment, so they can manufacture it. The labs would make the prints and be able to test them on site. There's a certain amount of cinemas. There's a lot of cinemas in the US still have, especially in the major cities, 70mm options. And Canada and like we have in the IFI the last remaining 70mm projector in the country, which we were lucky because we had it installed to show old movies, archival old 70mm prints. And the resurgence now has happened. And we're like, wow, that was great timing. So now we have all new films to show, which is wonderful.
Yeah. And the projectors themselves, are they big?
Yeah, pretty large. They make the sound is a challenge because you're in a closed shop, essentially. So I discovered after... Dunkirk. I ran Dunkirk for 4 months. Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of people say, is that the right sound for Dunkirk? It's hard to tell.
That movie was fairly short. It was like just over 2 hours. It was four shows a day for 3 months.
Whoa.
And it was a bit of a challenge in the ears. Yeah. So now it's all noise cancellation, earbuds. I insist on it now.
Yeah.
Because it's just like you can get by for one or two shows, but it has a long-term effect. So you got to really look after your ears.
Then, yeah. You know? And can you, from inside, are you adjusting the sound as well? And
well,
do you have
we
latitude
could.
There?
Yeah, we do. We do tests. So we'd find the sweet spot of what, like the sound level's different digitally and different on the 70mm. So usually in a test run, I would sit in different parts of the screen and just make sure there's a good average. Like it might sound great in the back, but then you sit closer to the front and it's like, oh, it's a bit too loud there.
Mm.
So you make slight adjustments. And we'd go with that. that level, you know. But you do have a, you know, a bit of latitude. When you're in digital films, you have a bit more latitude. Like if we ran Apocalypse Now, I might turn up the helicopter scene a little bit. I just run back and then turn it back down when it's finished, things like that. But with the 70 mil, we usually we do a lot of tests, so we stick with what we've discovered is the nice.
Does it ever happen that, that films that are shot on digital are then transferred onto celluloid?
Yeah, that was a weird one. I think it was Michael Mann did that years ago with a film called Public Enemy, where he shot it entirely digitally and he printed it on film. So that was a good 15, 20 years ago, just when digital was becoming a thing. It looks very strange.
Yeah.
But that's what he wanted. He wanted a very realistic effect of period 1930s gangsters. So if you ever see that movie, it looks odd. It's a very specific look.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen too often now. Because there's...
It'll still look like digital,
yeah,
I imagine.
Well, it'll have grain, which digital won't. But you know, there's a lot of... The Brutalist recently, Brady Corbet, his new film now, he's shooting it directly on 70mm. And apparently it's going to be 4 hours long, we've heard.
Whoa.
So that's going to be a big challenge. So that's next year. That's a big challenge for us next year. And we have The Odyssey coming up, which is probably going to be the biggest film we'll run this year. Judging by the pre-sales in America, that was shot on IMAX 70mm, which is a kind of an offspring of regular 70mm. So it's going to look particularly great because literally there's no loss. You're shooting exactly how you're going to print. That's going to be that's going to be a big challenge. That's going to run probably for a long time, going by Oppenheimer's success, I think.
Oh, well, Paul, you have work cut out for you, you and your team. It's hard physical work. Paul Markey is chief projector at the IFI. Paul, thanks a million.
You're welcome.
A few comments on that. Phil says the renewed interest in film over digital is like the revival in vinyl. People like the more organic feel and sound and the optics of the older technology. Yeah, perhaps we'll see because at the same, I can see the analogy there. I don't know if it's exactly the same in the sense that if you're a film producer and there's a cheaper way of doing it, rather than the more expensive way of shooting it on film or even transferring it to film, you mightn't be inclined to put up that money. I suppose the difference with vinyl is that there was a demand there. There was an economic demand there. Mostly, and even at that, there was an economic demand mostly from kind of old fellas like me who could remember having records as opposed to there being a huge younger audience there who are buying loads of records, because if you walk into any record shop, it seems like everybody in the universe has to have at least 7 different copies of Rumours. Film is better. I prefer Duran Duran's Girls on Film to those digital AI ladies in my area who really want to date me. I found the same thing. Loneliness seems an epidemic. Women who can't even afford to wear clothes are desperately looking for some sort of human contact. There was a film out recently called Once Upon a Time in the Cinema, set in the 80s. That audience put up with a lot and were part of the whole evening. Filmed in Limerick in an original cinema, complete with a projection room, etc. Worth a watch. Okay, never heard of that.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.